It is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal, and we have in the center studio, yes, they're both here, Anne and Cynthia.
The door open.
Good morning.
Hello, hello.
Good morning. And we have Janet Manco on the telephone line. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning.
And I guess I should ask now what your schedule is for after Thanksgiving and the Halloween so people know what the paper and stuff like that. I mean,
you said the Halloween.
Halloween. Well, I mean, I meant.
You meant the holiday.
Holiday. Well, to me, it's like Halloween.
It's all Halloween.
That's right.
Our favorite.
Yeah, it seems like Halloween was just yesterday, but no, we're coming on to the holidays for Thanksgiving, the week coming up. We will be closed on Thanksgiving Day and that Friday. We do that every year, so our folks get 4 days off in a row and can go and do some wretched excess somewhere, I guess, or, you know, see what their grandmother's cooked up. And so we are on early deadline now. The papers will come out on Tuesday, November 26th, the way they do on Wednesday most weeks, and then the second delivery is on that Wednesday. So between Tuesday and Wednesday next week, the deliveries will happen. That usually happen on Wednesday and Thursday.
All right, here we go. We'll go right to the front page. And the town of Kent had another stunning week on TV this past week.
That's right. Marie Ivanovich, from who grew up in Kent, and everybody in Kent only has wonderful things to say about her. And as Ed Epstein points out in the article, there have been quite a few famous people and amazing people that have come out of Kent, a little tiny town on the side of a river underneath a mountain. And she really is one of the ones that everybody in America seems to know who she is. But we had Terry Cowgill, who was our former editor and writer, went to Kent Center School with her. We've got Ed Epstein, Bob Ober, who was a diplomat in Russia and had a very similar educational career path to her, all talking about what an amazing person she is and who she really is when she's not in a hearing.
All right. So we will keep following her career, obviously, closely. You got a nice picture there, the season ending for the Housatonic Mountaineers women's soccer team.
Tom Brown is so amazing and managed to get not only a beautiful photo of the action where every one of the players is engaged, but you get the sense of how cold it is from seeing the spectators out in the back and how important that game was, that there were still people sitting out there wrapped up in their, you know, parkas and frigid, but they were not going to miss an instant of that game. The coverage is very exciting. It's on in all the way in the back in this issue.
And congratulations to them. Not only did they bring the state champions to a tie, they lost in the penalty kick, in the penalty kick phase of it. Amazing for a small school to go up against a big school like that and take them right to the bottom line. That was fantastic job by those girls.
And I think that we've tended to focus a lot on Lauren Sagala. Is it Lauren or Sydney? Sydney Sagala during the season, who's such an amazing player, but the whole team is fantastic. She's had great support. They've all really worked together, and a lot of great players, and most of them are staying. Only two are graduating.
All right. Now, you, Cynthia, have the story, one that we videotaped over the past weekend. Three towns are planning fiber optic networks. Sharon, I don't know if they're planning one, but they're investigating the initial stages.
I think that they're all really, no matter what they say, they're all really investigating the initial stages. And it was interesting because you did have a couple people there who were sort of saying, you know, this industry is moving very quickly, and you're talking about doing something very complex, which is to start a municipal electrical authority. All the towns apparently need to have is a solar field to generate some electricity, and then they get access to the tops of those Eversource and telephone power lines and can run a fiber optic cable there, which right now state law forbids them from doing. And they're, you know, people who are mad about this say, well, they allowed the internet providers to bully them and lobby them. But when you read the decision that just came out, I think a week ago, from the state, what they were essentially saying is there's only room really for one company up there, and you're going to have competition. Like, once you open that up, you're not going to just be able to have one company. It's going to be like with the cell phone towers. You're going to want to have like your T-Mobile and your Verizon and your AT&T. They're all going to want access. And so that's why they had allied that. But so at a time, and you'll see this as we move into the center of the paper, when the state, when Aquarian and Eversource are buying back the water utilities because the water is too complex for towns to manage and there's too much danger of liability. It's interesting that now the towns are sort of stepping forward and saying, let's have our own municipal electric authority. So it'll be interesting to see. As you said, it's a long, long journey. And as a couple of people at the meeting said, a lot of stuff changes really fast in this industry. We'll see what the need is in 3 years.
Well, that's the whole thing. The enabling wireless technologies that can run off I won't even call them towers. I'll call them antenna stands that could be placed variously. There's just a lot that might happen in the next 2 to 3 years, which will make broadband more accessible. Now, I'm not saying cheaply accessible.
It's not cheap, this plan that they're looking at, and it's super complex.
Nothing is cheap when it comes to, to the broadband anymore. Nothing
and
is cheap.
It's like having a child. Once you start an electric municipal authority, you have to live with it for the rest of its life.
That's exactly right. All right, now let's go to, speaking of nothing is cheap, once again, your story on the membership model, and you've got questions and answers about that, Janet.
Right, and of course, this is from me, Cynthia, and everyone at the paper, and we're all keeping our ears open to any questions we hear from people. Some of them are addressed here. These questions and answers are different from last week's, and we will continue to do that. So thank you to everyone who has already read these pieces on the membership model we're proposing and responded to us. Our editorial is about this, too, and we list those who have already signed up for memberships, which it's very encouraging. We're feeling the support and really feeling as if people are understanding what's behind all this. When we are doing it multiple times, because we know there are times that our readers may not be around over a certain weekend and so miss it, or skim it 1 week and the next week think, where was that article? And so now we'll provide them with it. We will tone it down after a bit, but so far so good.
All right. On the inside, I did a story on this on Monday because I happened to see this. The protesters, about 30 of them, gathered at Cricket Valley Energy on Route 22. And four brave souls climbed the smokestacks, which won't emit any smoke, invisible particles, I'll admit, and hung out at the top. And you know what? I'm all for you want to protest the plant. I'm all for it. People can protest. They actually have space there where protesters can actually gather. They've actually built that in. But I'm not all for shutting down the entry to it. And I don't mind people, if they want to risk their own lives, climbing the smokestacks to put up banners. But it's a little late in the game to think that they're going to stop
it. Yeah.
I mean, that's my only thing. I mean, I know that I used to protest the Vietnam War, but I wouldn't chain myself to the road because, it was already underway.
Yeah,
once
the road is built, don't chain yourself to the road.
Yeah, it's really – so I understand they're wanting to protest, but – not to shut it down.
And so this is a story about anxiety, which is but also about, somebody once said to us that going on a protest march for her was a bucket list item. And so I think that for some people, the protest is an end into itself. And there was certainly a group, a performance art group that was there that's what they say. Like, we just go to events and we just protest just because, we're looking for a little visibility. But definitely a lot of people very concerned about Cricket Valley Energy and what it's going to be like when the plant goes online, which is going to happen fairly soon. And, we did do a very detailed story on this over the summer in three parts about the process by which they arrived at this, what some of the benefits are. A lot of these people are saying they want Governor Cuomo to shut down this plant. That seems unlikely to happen since he's the reason essentially that they're building this plant, because they closed down the Indian Point nuclear facility, which he felt was too close to the city and was therefore unsafe. So that nuclear plant provides pretty much most of the electricity for New York City and Westchester. And so this new Cricket Valley Energy plant will provide about one-third of what had been provided by Indian Point. If you want to read more about that, you can go onto our website and type in Cricket Valley. It should come up, although we've been having a little trouble with our search, so you can always email me and I'll send you the copies of the article. But so there's four local farmers who are protesters. They are the ones who had done a protest about a year ago where they chained themselves to tractors. It's always very newsworthy when they do that, but they also had a lot of other protesters come out. Blake Leavitt, who is definitely opposed to the plant and who is a watchdog over all known technology that's coming into the area, said, definitely don't climb up those smokestacks because they're testing them and it gets very hot. You could definitely be incinerated up there unless you've checked it with a company and said, can we spend the night at the top of the smokestack? And they've said, yes, we will not. And, you know, I have to say that Cricket Valley has been pretty supportive of the protesters. And, you know, they did call in the police, but also the protesters shut down the plant for the day and all the workmen had to go home. And even if the protesters can say, we're here to support you, the working man, we're not here to get in your way, the fact is none of those people got to work that day. So the police were called in. 29 people were arrested for protesting, obviously an emotional issue.
All right. Now, on the next page, a really, really big show in Cornwall, the talent show. I interviewed the people put together, and the last thing Gordon Ridgway said to me is, variety is the spice of life.
Gordon's funny in a very deadpan sort of a way. So Gordon Ridgway, the first selectman of Cornwall, and I feel like the talent show is a big deal, and then they didn't do it for a couple of years, and it's back now. And Lila Hawken said she started doing research for the article and was ready to be I don't want to say smug, but just to be sort of like, oh, a nice little show. And then she realized that there's world-class performers who are doing it in this little tiny space in Cornwall. So definitely worth going to, whether or not you're a Cornwall resident. There's not that much going on that weekend, so worth visiting.
And staying in Cornwall, they've approved the town plan, send it on to the state.
This is a huge big deal in all of our towns. I can't say this enough. Every 10 years, the state requires towns to update their town plan, which is the basis of their zoning regulations. If you love the way your town looks, you need to pay attention when they're doing the town plan, because that's where it's at. That's what decides if you want rural character, or if you want to have light industry, or if you want to have houses on big lots or little lots. Definitely people should pay attention. Cornwall did, and they approved their town plan, which will now go to the state.
You know, I'm looking at your story about the Clayway tour, and I just immediately flash back to David Oro when I used to be at Sharon Center School, and also when you made a clay pot and you got to fire it in the oven.
Oh, so cool, yeah. Because all of these, so Allison Palmer, a very well-known potter, and of course her husband Steve Katz, founding member of Blues Project and Blood, Sweat, and Tears. Beautiful work, a lot of potters all in multiple studios in Wingdale, Kent, and Cornwall. And they all have their own kilns, and they're very cool. They look like Egyptian burial tombs or something, but they fire once or twice a year, and people are invited to come in and watch.
I love the story on page A4, fulfilling the promise of local hops at Smokedown Farm in Sharon.
Because as we talk about locally brewed beer, it's even better if it's made with locally grown hops. And hops are very beautiful. James and Treby Shepherd had moved here. They'd been in India, I think. He's an epidemiologist. He's at Yale New Haven now. And they had wild hops growing on their property, and they built this beautiful farm there. With you can see Shrevey looking at the giant posts, and they have lines that run between the posts, and then the hops grow up them. And you can see in the photo that Caitlin Olinger took, they're quite beautiful, the hops, and they are now selling them. I think Kent Falls Brewery is using them, and I think a couple others.
Speeding in Sharon.
On Hilltop Road. We've all done it. We're all guilty. That little shortcut that you take by Sharon Center School, so which is annoying enough to the people who live on that road because it's a quiet little road. But, of course, it's what they call a rural minor collector between Route 4 and Route 41. So, you know, people shortcut it. And of course, we all come off those larger roads and continue at the same speed down the little road, which is worse because there's a child care center and a school there.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on to the Falls Forward North Canyon page. The holiday sale and schedule on the Hoosie FFA is they're getting set to open up, and they'll be open every day till the 23rd.
Starting November 30th, which is a week from Saturday, and always fantastic trees, wreaths, poinsettias, cheddar cheese, all sorts of interesting stuff, and a great fundraiser for the kids who also learn how to run and manage a shop, which is a great skill, even though everything in the world is online now. But, you know, it's still a great skill. And we have the full schedule of the sales, and then speaking of towns buying their utilities to do broadband, Aquarion, which is now owned by Eversource, Aquarion is the water company, they're going around because the regulations are getting stricter, and there's always a lot of anxiety about the quality of the water. I remember the state came out with a study about 2 or 3 years ago and said, there's a problem with I think it was Sharon or Salt, Sharon's water. And, you know, we did a long conversation with Malcolm Brown, who had been the head of the Water Commission, and Harry Hall at that time, and the water was fine. There's just a lot of mineral on it. But people do really want their water to be super clean. So the towns are giving up the right to the management of that to the larger company.
All right, North Canaan approves the middle school sports schedule proposal, and I think most towns are going to approve it.
I have the count. Okay. I know what the count is. So Willie Yon was texting me from his meeting in Cornwall last night where they were voting on it, and the final official vote is November 26th. And so if what we've been told is if four of the six towns approve it, then it goes through, and whether or not your town has approved it, you have to take part and help fund it. And there's going to be some pushback on that, I can imagine. But so Falls Village and Kent, which tend to be the more pushbacky towns, have both voted no, and the other towns, four towns, have voted yes. And I don't know if the Region 1 school board gets a vote. I don't think it hasn't been explained that they do, but it'll be interesting to see what happens on the 26th when they have that final meeting.
I can tell you nobody's going to be happy when it's first implemented, because it's going to be a nightmare. But it could be successful if it's implemented correctly over the course of a couple of years where people get used to it. But it's not going to be an easy solution. I mean, I think everybody realizes.
Yeah, nothing's easy.
It's not going to be an easy
solution. And one of the big concerns that people have had is, you know, that they don't really want their middle school kids on the bus with high school kids. And I was over at GEAR yesterday interviewing Leslie Sheldon about the big, beautiful Christmas display that's going up. And she said, you know, can I talk to you about the buses for a minute? So she gave me a whole talk about the bus driver, you know, how they really need bus drivers. And so there's an article coming up in next week's paper about it. But I said, by the way, one of the big issues with the sports thing has been the buses. And she said, there's a lot of middle school, you know, co-op sports programs going on now, and they're great. And she said, you know, actually, it's not that. She said, actually, the middle school kids tend to be the ones who are the most rowdy. And when they're with the high school kids, she said, it tends to actually calm them down because they're looking at the older kids and trying to be a little cooler. So that article will be in next week's paper.
All right. On the Salisbury page, wasting the chance to use power well.
James Foreman Jr., a Yale law professor, came as part of the Salisbury Forum and talked about how as power went more and more into the hands of Black community members, that there was a learning curve and that hasn't always benefited the Black community, and sort of going into the details on that.
Well, you've also got Recognizing Racism and Trying to Eliminate It by Patrick Sullivan as well.
Right. Gwendolyn Van Zandt, who's a very respected person up in Great Barrington working on racism and trying to explain to people, you know, I hate to say it, but of our generation, in the same way that hashtag Me Too is a lot of it is generational and seeing that things that were okay when we were kids maybe are not interpreted in the same way. She's talking about racism and how it should be looked at and why it's become why it's still a problem and how we need to shift our thinking on it.
A nice little story on SOAR by Patrick Sullivan as well.
Yeah, Michael Berkeley, so amazing, working with the kids doing Disney songs.
And I think SOAR is part of that event that's coming up tomorrow night at Salisbury Central School, where they have a vendor fair and they've got different nonprofit charities that are there selling different things as well. That's going on tomorrow night at the school.
And just very quickly, the Reverend Edwin Michael Ward, former headmaster of Salisbury School, and we had Richard Flood 2 weeks ago. So two notable leaders of Salisbury School died in the past couple weeks.
All right, on your opinion page, once again, your editorial, Janet.
Grateful response for those who have already given to our membership campaign. And I've got to say, we were surprised in a way that we received such immediate and very supportive response, understanding that to keep local news going, it's an urgent situation. But we just wanted to find a way to take these newspapers or, you know, local coverage to the next step, and this has happened with ownerships over the past more than 100 years, since 1897, and so our ownership has been with us since 1995, and we were looking for another transition to the next step for these little newspapers and other publications, this is what we decided to try, and so far we've really been gratified by the response and understanding. And so, you know, we'll keep at it. We will keep informing you. Next week we're going to talk about some of the history of the company and the financials that brought us to this point, and over the years, the financials. So we have received behind the scenes some really extensive questions from a couple of folks who we have responded to individually, and we will do that next week in the paper. But we also have a charming piece from Priscilla Belcher of Falls Village, where she shared with us a letter she had received from her brother when he was in Vietnam. So that's that we were treating as a letter to the editor, even though the letter itself is, you know, from 1967. And other letters of support and a history lesson for Don Jr. from Rob Ober. We don't have a viewpoint page this week because we have lots of obituaries and sports news, and we're keeping the paper as compact as we can. And so let us know if you miss it.
All right. And once again, I have to go back to turning back the pages. Mr. Fulkerson is driving a new Dodge car.
You know, I wish we had a picture, but, you know.
And when Dodge was new.
And you've got a couple of soccer stories on this on the sports page.
And let me quickly throw in, people have had very specific questions. And one thing we've found in our research is that people don't understand that newspapers actually are really struggling financially. And some of the questions that we've had indicate that people think that, you know, there's lots of money floating around and we're just, I don't know. But we are having an open house at the Journal and our Falls Village office on November 26th, which is next Tuesday from 1 to 3:30. And by special request, we will have some jigsaw puzzles, and we'll do a jigsaw puzzle swap, too.
I think we find when people, I know, like I said with us, when we needed to raise money very quickly for a transmitter that had, our AM was off the air, people came together, and within 5 days, we raised about $35,000 to $40,000. People around the area, when they are reminded, and know that they use something, will come out and support it. We found that, and you just have to keep hammering away. And we all have to change our models the way we operate over the past 10 years, and just imagine the changes we're going to have to make over the next 10 years.
Oh, yeah. It's true. We have to be super flexible, and it can change year to year. It can change month to month, week to week. You just have to be ready, so... Yeah. Let's all do that.
All right. Speaking about being ready, Ann Day, it is time for you.
Thank you, Marshall. We have a fabulous compass this week. It's, you know, there's always lots of things going on, but because it's Thanksgiving, there are extra special great things going on. And we have the cover is a show at the Berkshire Botanical Gardens, Leonhardt Gallery, which I have never been to. It's absolutely beautiful. It's a colonial house that's been gutted and not totally gutted, but it's been rehabilitated into a gallery space full of sunshine. And these paintings by Cynthia Wick, who lives in Lenox. She's a Los Angeles native who has all of the bright colors and botanical spirituality that people have in Los Angeles. It's very California feeling, but most of the paintings were done in the Berkshires. It's a great show. It's up through December 1st at the Berkshire Botanic Garden. We have this movie that everybody's been talking about, and I promise every single person either says they loved it or they hated it, and Rick Rosso has managed in one review to say both. And he's a wonderful writer, and I wish I'd it'd be great to use him more because he's a really funny, smart writer, and he's a race car driver. So his approach is, well, you know, it's not so accurate with all the car stuff, but the acting is great, the story's great, and it sounds to me like it's a movie worth seeing.
I loved it.
Yeah, Cynthia loved it.
Well, because the story is a true story, and the way they propose, the way it's depicted on TV with racing, you don't know because we're not racers and we don't
right.
know the reality of being in the car. And
exactly.
Everything. But it does make a story, and I think your headline is great, Badass Mogul versus Badass Mogul.
Oh, I like your headline better. My headline says Hothead Mogul versus Hothead Mogul, but Badass is better. I wish I'd thought of that, Marshall. I'm going to call you next time.
Okay.
You can come in and read the pages as we're doing.
Yeah, I'd need some help with headlines sometimes. Okay, then we have a review of a play over in Rhinebeck called The Women, which we've all seen the movie. The play, I think the production is fine. I think the reviewer's objection to it wasn't the production, but really, like, why would anyone want to put on The Women now? Because it's really an anti-woman play, which makes women all look awful and nasty and cheating on each other and lying to each other. But anyway, I'm sure it's still entertaining. They're kind of all doing nasty things to each other, which secretly some people like to watch. Okay. Then we have my favorite thing up here. One of my favorite things up here is to go to the opera at the Millerton Movie House or the Mahewi, because you don't have to get dressed up, you don't have to wear high heels, and you get to see, you get the best seats in the house no matter where you're sitting. And this week they're presenting the Philip Glass opera from the early 80s. I forget which year it was. I think it was 81 or 83. It's a new production. Everybody's been talking about the star, this countertenor, Anthony Roth Costanzo. And I just saw a clip from the opening night at the Metropolitan Opera, and it looks spectacular. So I don't know if there are tickets left, but go online and see. It's being shown on Saturday, November 23rd, and then again on Sunday, and then at the Mahewi on Wednesday, December 4th. Nice. And then in calendar, we have lots of things. One thing that I wanted to mention is that there's this really cool, in Lakeville, there's this Noreen Driscoll is doing these wreath-making workshops at what's it called, the new place?
It's where my gym used to be. It's right next to the gas station across the street from the boathouse.
Exactly, that building. And it has a name. It's called the Pilgrim House. Not the Pilgrim House. It's called, I'm sorry, so sorry.
I don't think anybody knows it by that name, but it's the Little White House at the corner, and she's got a sign outside.
There's going to be really good wreath-making workshops there, and there's also an exhibition by the Housatonic Camera Club. And we have a lot of things going on. We have the Cornwall, Reed's Cornwall, for the 150th anniversary of the Cornwall Library. We're going to have five current famous Cornwall residents reading excerpts of famous, notable Cornwall residents of the past.
All right. You're out of time.
I'm out of time. Sorry.
Fully.
I'm trying to jam it all in.
Well, a lot.
Just buy the paper and read the calendar. There's lots of stuff. And go online. We have more stuff.
All right.
And don't miss Tricona Real Estate, also in the paper this week.
That's it. All right, guys, we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you so much.
We could go on and on.
That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal here on Robin Hood Radio. You'll find them at tricornernews.com on the web.